Portions of the following program from Hollywood are transcribed.
Hello there. This is the entire staff of announcers in the Hollywood studios of the National Broadcasting Company. Under ordinary conditions, one announcer would be sufficient to introduce the program. But this is a special program, as you will presently see. Among those to be heard from will be George Murphy, Audie Murphy, Jane Russell, Jim Durante, Ronald Regan, High Arabak, Dick Powell, and Henry Russell's orchestra and chorus. The next voice you hear will be that of Dick Powell, and here he is.
Thank you, gentlemen, for that concerted introduction, and hello there. We're here this fine Sunday to ask you to join us in celebrating the birthday of someone all Hollywood regards as a wonderful person. Tomorrow is the 173rd birthday of Uncle Sam. 173 years. That's almost as old as some of the moving pictures we see on television. But you know, for a fellow that old, Uncle Sam is in mighty good shape, and I guess we're all pretty proud to be his nieces and nephews. But tomorrow also happens to be the birthday of a motion picture star named George Murphy. And it's a funny thing. George has never really had a birthday party. Being an event of less importance than the birthday of American independence, George's anniversary has always been lost in the sound of the firecrackers and the brilliance of the skyrockets. But today, we're throwing George a party, properly honoring this Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer star for his acting ability, for his being a good citizen, for his tireless efforts in organizing entertainment for servicemen throughout the world during the late war, and in all of the veterans' hospitals today. Gathered here in the NBC studio are a number of Hollywood celebrities who will greet George when he arrives. But before that, we want to let you in on a little secret. When George shows up expecting to celebrate his birthday, we're going to double-cross him by celebrating everything we can think of except his birthday. I was nominated to hatch this foul plot, so I telephoned George at his home late yesterday.
Hello?
Hello, George. This is Dick.
Oh, Dick. How are you, Dick?
Fine.
How's the wife?
Great. Just great.
How are the kids?
Wonderful.
Dick who?
Dick Powell. Look, George, the gang's going to throw a birthday party during your rehearsal time tomorrow at NBC, and I thought I ought to tip you off.
Birthday party? Oh, you mean for the anniversary of independence.
Now, George, stop being coy.
Huh?
The 4th of July happens to be the birthday of somebody else besides Uncle Sam.
Oh, then you know, huh?
Well, of course. And I thought it would be better if, well, better if you knew in advance. You might want to make a speech or something, George.
Oh, gosh, this is wonderful, Dick. I'll never forget you for tipping me off. Gonna be a surprise, huh, Dick?
Oh, yeah. It'll be a surprise, all right. Goodbye, George.
See you Sunday, Richard.
On my way from the studio, I stopped at St. John's Hospital to see Ronald Regan. I knew Ronnie wouldn't be able to attend the birthday party because of the leg he broke in that charity baseball game a while back. Fortunately for Ronnie, though, he was covered by insurance. The company isn't going to pay him any money, but they guarantee to teach him how to limp. But I had another reason for visiting Ronnie. I thought he might think of some trick we could pull on George Murphy. Well, as I entered Ronnie's hospital room, I saw him lying there with his broken leg and this tremendous cast. Somehow it reminded me of the lost weekend. It also had a plastered cast. I explained to Regan that we were planning to whack up George Murphy, and he said to me, Regan says,
Paul, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. Pulling a low, mean, despicable, cheap trick like that on a nice, lovable guy like George Murphy. What can I do to help?
I explained to Regan that we needed some ribs to pull on Murphy, a good, practical joke. And Ronnie certainly pulled one out of the hat.
Look, Dick, it's very simple. When you leave here, go to a library, get an encyclopedia and find a list of all the famous people born on July 4th. Then, when Murphy arrives at the party expecting to be the toast of the crowd, just keep making speeches to honor other people born on the 4th of July and never get around to Murphy. Get it?
I thank Ronald Reagan for being such a genius and was off to the public library. There I found an almanac that gave me the names I wanted, the names of all the important people born on the 4th of July. So as soon as George Murphy arrives, we'll start burning him up with...
Mind if I come in, Richard?
Well, bless his little pointed head if it isn't George Murphy. George, I'm really glad to see you because, well, we're having a little celebration today and it certainly wouldn't be complete without you. Friends, as you know, tomorrow is the birthday of the father of freedom, Uncle Sam. But it also happens to be the birthday of another great American. A man who will be long remembered for his accomplishments in his chosen profession. A man whose name will go down in history. A man...
Really, Dick, you're embarrassing me.
And so, as we revere the name of Uncle Sam, let us not lose sight of the fact that July 4th is also the birthday of Calvin Coolidge.
Well, gosh, Calvin Coolidge, born on the 4th of July. I didn't know that, Dick. But then the 4th is the birthday of another very famous person, too.
Oh, but of course, hi. I mentioned President Coolidge only to show the pattern. Ooh. Only to establish the fact that there must be something in the stars to transmit the quality of greatness to those born on the 4th of July. And that leads me up to, well, up to the name of a man none of us shall ever forget. A man who took a great talent for holding an audience spellbound and unselfishly devoted it to his country.
Oh, Dick, look, you're spreading it out a bit thick, old boy. Take it easy.
Let us all sing happy birthday to that great patriot, Giuseppe Garibaldi.
Maybe if I were dead, I'd stand a chance here.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Garibaldi.
On the other hand, Dick, there's another famous person born on July 4th.
Uh-oh, this is it.
You bet your life there is, High Averback. A man whose wholesome influence on the American public will be forever remembered. Why, there isn't a household in America where this man's name isn't glorified. He's truly a symbol of American accomplishments.
I tap dance too, you know, Dick.
What is there about this magical 4th day of July that not only gives the world Calvin Coolidge and Giuseppe Garibaldi, but also produces Stephen Foster?
I wish I was in any old Kentucky home far, far away at this moment.
But you're forgetting somebody, Dick. There's still another great American who first saw the light of day on Independence Day.
Of course there is, and that's precisely why we're here today. But, hi, I wouldn't think of passing the name of Stephen Foster without the orchestra bringing us a medley of selections from the pen of Stephen Foster.
Thank you.
I guess that Stephen Foster must have been the greatest man ever born on July 4th outside of Uncle Sam.
Dick, isn't there somebody else who was born on the 4th of July?
Certainly, hi, and I'm rather ashamed of myself for waiting so long to mention his name.
Well, it's only a one-hour program, you know.
This man's contribution to the world is so great that mere words are not adequate to describe his greatness.
Don't overdo it, pal. Just get to it.
In fact, realizing the futility of words alone to convey adequately the story of this man's importance, we have asked the NBC Sound Effects Department to deliver his tribute. To another famous 4th of July baby, Oliver S. Winchester, the inventor of the Winchester rifle.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Mr. Winchester. Happy birthday to you. Some birthday. Look, pal. Could it be by any chance that you've overlooked someone else who was born on July the 4th?
The big things, Murphy, we say for the finish. Friends, as you can see, many great personalities were born on the 4th of July. You've heard so far of statesmen, inventors, musicians. We now come to a great actor.
Stick close to the microphone, Ma.
Certainly many moons will pass before the 4th of July produces a talent as great as that belonging to George...
At last...
M. Cohan.
You can shut it off, Ma.
Henry Russell, the chorus and the orchestra bring us selections from the compositions of the Yankee Doodle Dandy himself, George M. Cohan. Cohen was certainly a 4th of July baby whose birthday deserves our attention.
But there are others, you know.
Yes, George. Also born on the 4th of July was the celebrated author Nathaniel Hawthorne. The sculptor William Rush. The senator from Ohio Ethan Allen Brown. The
actor George Murphy. The senator Brad. It's okay, Dick. It's all right. I can take a joke as well as the next fellow. But I think it was a pretty crummy trick to deliberately mislead me into thinking this was a birthday party for me. So far, you've mentioned every name in the telephone book except Murphy.
Oh, an unforgivable oversight, George.
Well, all right.
But we'll make amends right now.
Well, I'll forgive you if you hurry up.
All right, Bud. Ladies and gentlemen, all kidding aside, I want you to meet a tremendous man named Murphy. A great actor, a real gentleman, presenting the most decorated hero of World War II, Audie Murphy.
Thank you, Dick Powell, and hello, everyone. Friends, up to now, there's been a lot of horseplay here on this stage. From this moment on, I want you to know that we're here to honor a great and generous man. Now, the fact that George Murphy came into the world on the 4th of July was accidental. But it's no accident that he lives 365 days each year, as if every pardon me, George, as if every day were the 4th of July. I'd like to thank George today for his efforts through the USO and the Hollywood Coordinating Committee, because he made entertainment a weapon during the late war. You know, I lived in the United States all of my 18 years before I became a soldier, and I never saw a movie star. But I saw plenty of them in Africa, France, and Germany, thanks to George Murphy and the wonderful people he helped organize and direct. A dog face in a trench couldn't go to the show, so Hollywood brought the show to him. We're here today to honor George Murphy on his birthday. We're here to wish him well in the debut of his new radio show, Hollywood Calling. Be heard at this same time every week starting next Sunday. But I'm here especially to thank George for what he did for the GIs. And with me today are a handful of survivors from my old outfit, the 3rd Infantry Division. For George's birthday, we'd like to ask the studio audience to join us in singing Happy Birthday to George Murphy.
Murphy, Dick Powell, and friends. A man's birthday is really not a tribute to himself, but a tribute to his parents. If I've done anything in my life to make me deserving of being remembered, anything at all, I owe it strictly to Mom and Pop. And I guess I owe the stork some gratitude, too. For a while, it looked like I wasn't going to be born until the 5th of July. You see, with all those skyrockets going off, the stork was a little afraid to come in for a landing. But he finally made it, and that put my birthday in some mighty good company. As Audie Murphy told you, it's going to be my good fortune to be part of a new weekly program that begins on this hour next Sunday. Radio programs, like people, have to be born. And it's nice to join the great and popular sons and daughters of Mother NBC, who has given more famous children to the world of entertainment than any of her contemporaries. It was New Year's Day, 1927, that you listeners first heard the sound. Those chimes have sounded more than 400,000 times since then. When the German radio was blaring forth with battlefield propaganda trying to make our soldiers in Europe lay down their arms and surrender, their programs often signed off this way. The Hitler propaganda machine couldn't think of anything that sounded more American than those three notes that stand for NBC. No other network can make that statement. I'm very proud to be chosen as the skipper to pilot NBC's big new Sunday series. And I guess that's about as fine a birthday present as any fella could ever receive.
George, I know the newspapers have been crammed with speculation. What's really going to happen on this Hollywood Calling program of yours?
Well, instead of explaining it, Dick, I'd like to demonstrate. It's a little bit complicated because we'll have almost 100 people on the stage here helping give away the most desired jackpot a quiz show ever offered. For instance, it requires 10 telephone operators here at NBC to handle the calls to listeners in all of the 48 states. So while we get ready to demonstrate how this is done, we on NBC's newest program would like to salute our illustrious predecessors. The orchestra, under the baton of Henry Russell, brings us a cavalcade of theme songs made famous through the years on the network identified with this sound.
you're under 20 years old, stand by, kids, while we ask Mom and Pop, do you remember Billy Jones and Ernie Hare as the Happiness Boys?
How do you do, everybody? How do you do? How do you do, everybody? How are you? When the skies are kind of gray and you're feeling just that way, ain't it great to hear folks say, how do you do?
And what listener in those days of the crystal set and the cat whisker Galena failed to thrill to Captain Henry's Showboat? From out in Chicago came Sam and Henry, dressed up in new names given them by an NBC elevator operator, Amos and Andy. His hands, rolled his eyes, and sang about love and the price of potatoes. Do you remember? And then from State College, PA, that unforgettable organization of musicians who call themselves Fred Waring and the Pennsylvanians.
Of me on NBC, where he spends Tuesday night. We thank him so much.
Yes, Bob Hope. Then came the little fella made of wood who emulated the man who carved him by carving himself a place in the Hall of Fame. Charlie McCarthy. Then was born the era of the great dance band combination. And what a showcase they had on the Fitch Bandwagon. See if you remember tapping your toes to such theme songs as these. Thank you. Yes, Ted Weems, one of the first of the great radio orchestras. And then, of course, the old maestro himself, the man who made the word yowza as household as a gingham tablecloth, Ben Burney. The campus of Yale University came a boy with a megaphone to sing and play his way into the hearts of millions. Will ever forget the man with the Moonlight Serenade, Glenn Miller. Strong after 20 years is the sweetest music this side of heaven, Guy Lombardo. George Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue.
It's a quiz show, Dick, based on motion pictures and motion picture stars. We telephone people all over the country. If a listener can identify a picture star suggested by a set of clues, he wins a prize. Now, we're going to be giving away hundreds of Gruen Precision watches autographed by our guest stars, plus many, many other wonderful prizes. In addition to this, he earns the right to compete for the film of fortune. That means trying to name the title of a motion picture as indicated by another set of clues.
And what's the prize for identifying the film of fortune?
A jackpot that starts off with $31,000 in prizes.
$31,000?
That's what I said.
That reminds me of the story about the actor who threatened to jump off the Empire State Building. His friend said, great, but what'll you do for an encore?
We'll think of something, Richard. We'll think of something.
George, how about giving a set of clues and letting me see if I can guess?
No, that's very gracious of you indeed, and I appreciate it. But waiting in the wings at this particular moment is my own particular guinea pig.
Guinea pig? I'm surrounded by assassins. I've been mistaken for an anteater, but never for a guinea pig.
Why, it's the old schnozzle of Jimmy Doretti.
In person?
Jimmy, I'm glad to see you. Now, I'm going to explain the idea of my new program to you. First, we present a set of clues that suggest the name of a famous motion picture star, see? Then we make telephone calls around the 48 states.
You better change that to 47 states. There's no point in making any calls to Missouri.
Why not?
There's nobody left in Missouri. They're all in Washington.
Wait a minute. There must be a few Republicans left there.
Republicans? They've been disconnected.
All right. We forget Missouri. Now, look, let's say that you're a contestant on the phone. You have a phone, haven't you?
Yeah, and it's driving me crazy.
Why, what's the trouble?
Every time I pick up the receiver, some nosy dame wants to know what number I'm calling. And not only that, but I'm on a party line.
Do you object to that?
No, but it gave me a line on some very interesting parties. But who am I to look a gift blonde in the mouth?
No. That's not blonde, that's horse.
That's the way I like my blondes built.
Well, I was saying, Jimmy, that you're a contestant and we've called you on the phone, see?
Where?
Anywhere in the country. Well, let's say, for instance, Coney Island.
Coney Island? And have 100,000 kids trying to slide down my nose?
All right, Jimmy, look, it doesn't matter where you are. Our telephone operators will reach you, see? Now, we've got a stage full of girls, each one behind an instrument, and the whole group directed by one man.
It's mutiny. You stole the whole thing from spilled pistanity. I knew I'd never get over that line. But they insisted on keeping it in.
Jimmy, you handle it beautifully.
But tell me, Mr. Murphy, what happens when one of these operators gets me on the phone?
Well, then you talk to me. You see how simple it is?
Yeah, I gotta get on a train, ride all the way to Coney Island, let 100,000 kids slide down my nose, and then wait for a telephone call. For what? To talk to George Murphy, who's already standing here beside me.
Look, Jimmy, suppose you sit down, pretend you're a contestant on the telephone, and we'll play a set of clues for you. Now, what you're supposed to guess is the name of the movie star suggested by these clues.
Betty Grable.
Betty Grable? Wait a minute. Thing is getting way out of hand. You're giving me the answers before I've even asked you the question.
Betty Grable, I'll take with no questions asked.
Jimmy, if it's possible, will you forget Betty Grable?
Forget Betty Grable? You're asking for the supreme sacrifice.
Well, I'm sorry. Look, I don't want you to feel too bad about it.
Oh, it ain't me. I just don't like to disappoint Betty.
Well, in any case, the star in question is not Betty Grable, you see. It happens to be a man.
That's going to make it a lot easier.
Yes, it will.
And a lot duller, too.
Well, I don't think so. Now, let's see if you can figure out this actor's identity from this set of clues. The title of this song hit of a dozen years ago is a color. And that color is the same as the hair of this popular male picture star. In a recent Columbia picture, this young comedian was a salesman. The kind of a salesman he was is the first word of the title of this tune.
Brush those tears from your eyes and try to realize that the ache in my heart is for you. Brush those tears from your eyes and try to realize that the ache in my heart is for you.
All right, if you've been listening closely, you know that this red-headed comedian to whom we refer also played the part of a brush salesman in a recent picture. Now, one more clue. This song refers to a door that someone wants Richard to open. Now, the one key that will open any door has a name that is almost the same as this red-headed comedian's family name. Who is he?
Jimmy Durante, you've heard the clues. The man is a red-headed comedian. He appeared in The Fuller Brush Man, and his last name resembles a skeleton key.
Words. I'm looking for clues.
Now, wait a minute. Don't go away. Think hard. Can you name the motion picture star described in those clues?
I don't know. It's pretty complicated.
Oh, come on now, Jimmy. It's easy. Well, that's so simple a child could understand it. In fact, I'll prove it to you. I'm going to ask a child to come up out of the audience. Here, young lady right there, would you come up here, please? Yes. Madam, let her by, if you don't mind. Come right up here, darling. Here. Come right over here to the microphone. Now, look, you heard the same clues that Mr. Durante heard, didn't you? Were you able to recognize the name of the movie star contained in those clues?
Indubitably. It requires neither hypersagacity nor inordinate perspicacity to ascertain, incontrovertibly, that the cognomen of the cinematic thespian therein implied is palpably and inexorably clear.
You see what I mean, Jimmy? It's so simple a child can understand it.
Yeah, the only trouble is I can't even understand the child.
Durante.
Yeah, but if I could find my way home alone, I'd leave now.
Mr. Durante, is it your implication that the complexity of my precocious intellect inhibits your interpretive proclivities and stultifies your etymological comprehension?
Oh, all I know is if I was your old lady, I'd wash your mouth out with soap.
My semantic ingenuity is beyond pre-adventure of misinterpretation. Merely a precocious manifestation of semasiological profundity. That's what Mama says.
Then if I was your old man, I'd wash her mouth out. Now go away, little girl, and when you leave, don't say a word. Just wave bye-bye. That I can understand.
Jimmy, you must be kidding. Those clues are really very obvious. You must know the name of the picture star.
Why, indubitably. It requires neither hyperacidity or indoor perspiration, hop-along cassette, disentrain, Oldsmobile, convertibility that the cinnamon hyperparian is papa-tating and excrutingly clear. The answer is Red Skelton.
Red Skelton is absolutely correct. And Jimmy Durante, for guessing the name of the star, let's say you have just won yourself a complete Encyclopedia Britannica. How do you like that?
How do I like it? I don't even know what it is.
Jimmy, sometimes, you know, sometimes I think that you are non-compass mentis.
Don't say that, Mr. Murphy. My mentis is as compass as yours. Maybe compasser. There's no more lines. Go ahead.
You can make something out of that. Well, Jimmy, look, besides the Encyclopedia Britannica, you have also won the right to compete for the Film of Fortune.
That's all I need.
Oh, yes, this is a prize. This time, you must name the exact title of a motion picture identified by another set of clues. The correct answer to this, the exact title of the Film of Fortune, will bring you $31,000 in prizes. Now, listen closely as we give you the clues to the Film of Fortune.
Mr. Murphy, I'm all ears, which is a pretty good trick for a guy with my nose. Let's have the clues.
Back in 1945, there was made in Hollywood a motion picture which shocked and thrilled millions of moviegoers. Startling, exciting, completely different. This motion picture showed a fork being drawn slowly across the tablecloth. A little boy sliding down a banister to his death. A man descending a staircase with a razor in his hand.
All right, Mr. Durante, you've heard the clues. Now, for $31,000 in prizes, can you identify the Film of Fortune? Can you give the exact title of the motion picture described in those clues?
Why, Mr. Murphy, it's so simple a child can understand it. Hey, kid, come back up here. We'll split 50-50.
No, wait a minute. No, young lady, you stay right where you are. You're on your own, Durante. Do you know the title, or don't you, of the Film of Fortune?
Mr. Murphy, I'm nonplussed.
Well, you have five more seconds. Would you like to try to guess the title of the picture?
I think I got it. The title of that picture is Kiss the Fingers Off My Hands.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. DeWitt, you do not win the film of Fortune Jackpot. However, like all other contestants on Hollywood Calling who qualify for the film of Fortune but can't identify it, if you were actually on the telephone now, you would receive an attractive and irreplaceable gift presented to you by one of the two motion picture stars who we have as our guests each week. On our opening show next Sunday, these guests will be Miss June Allison and Mr. Walter Pigeon from Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer.
Whatever happened to Betty Grable?
Oh, well, I think we'll be hearing from Betty, too, very soon.
Okay, now tell me, Mr. Murphy, what kind of gifts does Hollywood call and give to the losers?
Well, Jim, let's let a lovely actress answer that question by transcription. Ladies and gentlemen, we take you now to a soundstage at the RKO Studios. And the voice of the popular star of the Howard Hughes production, The Outlaw, Miss Jane Russell.
Thank you, George. Congratulations on your new show and happy birthday. Friends, I suppose the thought has never occurred to the average movie fan that those of us in the motion picture industry started out as fans ourselves. When I was a kid in high school in Burbank, I not only attended every picture I could see, but I was always anxious for a glimpse of a star in person and, well, an autograph if I could get it. One of my prized possessions to this day is a little old length of rope. It probably wasn't worth more than 50 cents when it was new, but that rope is priceless to me because it was a lariat used in a picture long ago by Will Rogers. When George Murphy was planning his new show, Hollywood Calling, with NBC, it was decided to give some special prizes in addition to the world's most attractive jackpot. It was the studio fan mail that gave him the idea. Thousands of letters are received by the studios every week asking for articles worn or used by the performers. At a charity affair, one of Bing Crosby's pipes has been known to bring hundreds of dollars when auctioned off. Using actual studio fan mail as a barometer, Hollywood Calling is collecting hundreds of such articles from the various studios, and they will be given to listeners as additional, irreplaceable gifts on the program. I've already seen some of these prizes, and take my word for it, they're really great. Well, just this afternoon, for instance, I admired a smart pearl necklace with matching earrings that was worn by Janie Greer in The Big Steal. Jane said I'd like to keep them, but the studio's already promised them to Hollywood Calling. There'll be gifts for many stars and many pictures, so be sure to listen to Hollywood Calling next Sunday at this time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jane Russell, and we plan to be seeing you soon as one of our guest stars.
Say, Mice, is that the straight goods about you giving away stuff they use in pictures?
Absolutely, Jimmy. Everything here is strictly on the level.
Gee, maybe I can get some of that gold they used in the Treasure of the Sierra Mattress. But I wanted to ask you another question, Mice. How do you pick the telephone numbers of the people that gets called up on your program?
Well, every week the numbers will be picked at random.
At random? Where is that?
Random, Jimmy, is anywhere in the 48 states.
48 states? Now you're talking my language. Now any state in the 48 is great. Celebrate. Live from border to border, things are in order. So tip your hat to your home ground. See that little twinkle up in the blue. Old Glory set aside a special star for you. So take a trip and it will demonstrate that any state in the 48 is great.
Oh, yes, that was wonderful, Jimmy. You're in great voice today. And I might add that the governors of those 48 states, as well as other prominent personalities, will help us pick at random from our complete collection of U.S. telephone books the telephone numbers that we will call on Hollywood Calling.
Good.
For example, Governor Earl Warren of California will pick the numbers that we're going to use next Sunday.
Good. He added to that speech, you know. If Governor Warren is listening in...
Best of
good.
Try.
Let me talk, please, Mr. Munchkin. Good, if Mr. Now you got me all mixed up.
Take you by the hand. I'll lead you back.
Good. If Governor Warren is listening in, my number is Fleetwood 96161. Hello. Yeah, this is Jimmy. You heard it? Well, that's wonderful. Then we're all set for next Sunday. I'll be waiting. Goodbye.
Hey, was that Governor Warren?
No, that was Betty Grable. Good night, Mr. Murphy.
Good night, Jimmy Durant.
In a few moments, George Murphy and Dick Powell will describe for you in detail the sensational jackpot we will offer on Hollywood Calling starting next week. But first, on this eve of July 4th, Henry Russell, his orchestra and chorus pledge musical allegiance to Old Glory. Ladies and gentlemen, as we've told you elsewhere in this program, next Sunday at the same time over the same stations, George Murphy begins his new series called Hollywood Calling. Hollywood Calling is a telephone quiz show with questions based on motion picture personalities and productions. Those of you who know your stars and pictures are in a position to win fabulous prizes if you know the right answers when your telephone rings. The gigantic jackpot will increase in size if someone doesn't win it next Sunday. But just so you'll know what you're aiming at, here are Dick Powell and George Murphy to give you a list of the prizes on the opening jackpot.
You'll find Hollywood Calling's first jackpot as exciting as the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer picture, Madame Bovary. And incidentally, the prizes are based on the locale of Madame Bovary, Gay Paris.
First, so the winner of the Film of Fortune may visit the actual scenes depicted in Madame Bovary, Milani Foods, makers of the famous 1890 French dressing, are sponsoring an all-expense round trip for two to Paris, France.
And to make certain the winner has pocket money for the trip, the Evans Lighter Company are not only giving a beautiful Evans handbag, completely equipped with powder box, cigarette case, lipstick, comb, and the new Evans automatic lighter, but in the coin purse they have tucked 300,000 francs.
For the lady taking the trip, Max Factor, the famous Hollywood makeup salon of the stars, has arranged to glamorize our traveler during her entire stay in the City of Light.
Also, Brother Factor's emporium will escort Milady to the Parisian couturier of her choice, where she will be supplied with $1,000 worth of made-to-order gowns.
Right, Richard. And Maximilian Furs of New York have waiting for our first Film of Fortune winner a magnificent Russian ermine jacket valued at $3,500, plus a generous bottle of the new Maximilian Furs perfume every birthday for life. This delightful scent is designed specially to go with fur.
And ladies, listen to this. $2,000 worth of the internationally famous hats designed by Mr. John of New York will be waiting for you at his salon on East 57th Street before you sail.
And to make her ensemble complete from head to toe, Laval, famous throughout the country for shoes of exquisite fashion, is presenting the winner with $1,500 in custom-made shoes.
From J.R. Wood & Sons, the country's oldest and largest manufacturers of rings, a $3,000 art-carved diamond ring.
For the man, a complete wardrobe of society brand clothes valued at $2,000. Included will be everything from casual jackets and slacks to smartly designed suits in the colors, pattern, and style that you want.
And so that the trip to Paris may be relived, the Keystone Camera Company have their famous 16-millimeter movie camera ready for you and loaded with color film. Plus, a complete darkroom setup, including a projector waiting for you at home on your return. And in addition, so hundreds of veterans may enjoy all the thrills of top-flight Hollywood movies, Keystone will supply a camera projector unit for the Veterans Hospital of your choice, plus a year's supply of first-run movies.
For your home, from the United States Glassware Corporation, a $1,500 complete matte set of hand-cut crystal.
From the Robert Urban Furniture Company, a splendid set of French provincial furniture valued at $2,000.
500 rose plants worth more than $1,250 from the renowned house of Bob Mink and Atkins, planted so that you will have roses blooming every month of the year.
And let's not forget the complete service for 12 of tall sterling flatware in the silver plumes pattern, plus a five-piece tea set in tall sterling old master pattern. A silver service totaling 174 pieces worth $1,500.
Yes, Dick, and the magnificent RCA projection television set with the new remote control. This receiver has a viewing screen almost the size of a newspaper page. This may be had in a variety of styles to blend with the most exquisite surroundings.
And to make sure you'll not have to ride the bus, you will become the proud owner of a brand new gleaming 1949 automobile.
This is the jackpot we will offer on the first Hollywood Calling program next Sunday. Now, how do you as a listener qualify to win it? Just tune in your favorite NBC station in your town and keep listening. If you're called, just give the right name of a motion picture star when we get you on the telephone. So come what may, be beside your telephone and your radio next Sunday when you hear us say...
The past
last hour has brought you a birthday salute to George Murphy, who in future weeks will be heard each Sunday at this time in radio's most fabulous giveaway show, Hollywood Calling. George Murphy appeared by arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of Edward, My Son, starring Spencer Tracy and Deborah Carr. Appearing on this program besides George Murphy were Dick Powell, heard on this network as Richard Diamond, private detective, Audie Murphy, Ronald Reagan, Miss Jane Russell, Jimmy Durante, courtesy Camel Cigarettes, Henry Russell, his orchestra and chorus. Be sure to be on hand for the premiere of Hollywood Calling next Sunday, when George Murphy's guests will be MGM stars June Allison and Walter Pigeon. In weeks to follow, there will be guest stars from Warner Brothers, 20th Century Fox, Paramount, Columbia, RKO, and Universal International. Portions of the show were transcribed. Folks, later this evening, NBC is premiering another new program, Four Star Playhouse. It's a great half hour of top dramatic entertainment with four great stars who appear in this order: Rosalind Russell, Fred McMurray, Loretta Young, and Robert Cumming. This is High Averback, thanking you for your pleasant company and urging you to stand by next Sunday, wherever you are, for Hollywood Calling.
This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.